Welcome to Sci Section. My name is Yamna Jaffrey, and I am the journalist for the Sci Section radio show, broadcasted on CFMU 93.3 FM radio station.
We're here today with Dr. McClellan from the Faculty of Biology here at McMaster. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course. And right before we start with the actual questions of this interview, I will give you some time to actually introduce yourself to our listeners who may not know the amazing research you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Grant McClellan, and as was mentioned, I'm in the biology department here at McMaster University. The way I got to McMaster is I did my undergrad in biology at University of Ottawa, and then I traveled out to UBC in Vancouver to do my PhD. And then I did two postdocs, one at Berkeley in California, and then the other at Queen's in Kingston. And then I secured my job here in 2003, and I've been here ever since.
Hey, that's wonderful to hear. And two postdocs is very impressive and took a lot of time, I'm assuming. But
yeah.
So, and moving on to your research then, just as a whole, what made you interested in actually pursuing research in physiology, or if you want to get more specific, phenotypic plasticity?
So I've always been interested in how animals work. That's the essence of physiology. And I'm a comparative physiologist, which means that I not only want to know how animals work, I want to know how the mechanisms that explain how they work, how those evolved. And because muscles are what animals use to move around, to do exercise for locomotion, they're really interesting. But muscles are also used by animals, specifically mammals, to stay warm through shivering. And so these are the two things that we measure in the lab: is how do animals use muscles to exercise? How do they use them to shiver to stay warm? And how is what muscles look like, the many parts of the muscles, which we call muscle phenotype, how do they change across populations or species that live in extreme environments that may need them to make changes to their muscle to survive?
And from what I can tell, you also use a variety of organisms within your research.
So I've used everything from honeybees to goats in my research. And as comparative physiologist, we want to select the animal model that is most convenient for us to answer the questions that we're posing. And for the last, for a long time, I've been interested in how animals live in the extreme environment of high altitude. And Paramiscus, which are deer, it's the genus that deer mice are found in, is ideal because deer mice are found everywhere in North America. So they're found in your garage. If you go out there and you see a little brown mouse, it's probably a deer mouse, but they exist at sea level all the way to the highest altitudes in North America.
Yeah, we actually had another prof talking about this amazing and very cute, may I say, species.
Yeah, they are very cute. Yeah, but people sometimes don't want to have them in their garages or in their houses.
I think that's a little understandable, right?
Yeah. So, so we work with a population of deer mice that come from sea level. We actually get them from Nebraska. And we also study a population that lives at the highest altitude that we can get to with a car, which is 4,300 meters in the Rockies in Colorado.
All right. And maybe branching out a little bit then from the amazing research you've done and are currently doing, what are some key takeaways from what you have learned at the McClellan Lab?
Well, I think in general, one takeaway that I have from my own research is that sometimes animals evolve to do things that you would predict simply from basic principles of biology or biochemistry. And so an example is that we were interested in how animals at high altitude power exercise. So what fuels do they use? And in a mammal, mice are just like us. They either use fats or carbohydrates when they're running. And just from biochemical principles, you would predict that they'd use more carbohydrates when they're at altitude because you get more ATP out of a mole of oxygen. So basically they're using oxygen more efficiently. So that's a biochemical feature of the oxidation of carbohydrates. And that's exactly what animals do. So we've shown this in both a group of mice in the Andes called leaf-eared mice in Peru and in the deer mice in North America. So I think that's really, to me, that's really fascinating that you can look at something from just basic principles and make a prediction of what an animal should do if they're following basic principles. And then when you go out and look at it and they actually do that, that's really exciting and fascinating to me.
Yeah, definitely. It would be super exciting to kind of see like our students or our listeners say, like making prediction and then actually getting the chance to actually see if that prediction actually happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going back a little bit to your undergrad or maybe your PhDs, what do you think you did differently compared to your peers that maybe helped you become who you are today or pursue the research that you're pursuing today?
Yeah. No, it's a good question. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it may be that I was willing to take risks. So when I was an undergrad, I heard there was a new professor in the department who was looking for a research assistant. And I had absolutely no research experience. I'd never worked in a lab. I thought this person is, there's no way they're going to hire me. But a roommate I had at the time said, well, just go talk to them. So I did. And for whatever reason, they ended up giving me the job. And, it was kind of a risk. I had to move away from Ottawa to Boston for the summer. And that summer experience really set in motion what led me to where I am today. Just because I realized that I loved research. And at the time, I also had a music background. And I'd been wanting to find something that was creative, and I didn't realize that research really combined creativity along with the science. So that really appealed to me, and it really kind of fit with my, I guess, career aspirations or what I wanted to do with my life.
I think the point you made about not necessarily having the prior experience, but still, you know, having the confidence and taking the chance to actually reach out to people is such an important aspect, right?
And I think I could have played it safe and not gone to see this professor, just got, you know, looked for a regular summer job. But for whatever reason, on that day, I decided, okay, I'm going to go talk to this person. And yeah, it really changed a lot of things.
I think it was meant to be then. That's wonderful.
I guess so. Yeah.
Okay, and maybe apart from these wonderful points you've just given us, maybe what kind of advice do you have for students who are listening to the show right now and who may be interested in pursuing research in general or maybe more specific to your lab as well?
Yeah, I think it's really find out if you like research. There's lots of rewards, and the rewards are discovering new things, which can be really exciting, but it involves a lot of tedious work. There can be failed experiments. The equipment can break down. You need to do a lot of troubleshooting. And so if you're not interested in answering that scientific question that you're studying, it's going to be difficult to weather the challenging parts of research. And I guess for my lab in particular, I mentioned that when I was an undergrad, I have no research experience, and I, you know, was lucky enough to get a position. So, and it's because I learned a lot in that first position because I had a really patient mentor that showed me the basics of how to do research, but also to think like a scientist. And I try and pass that down to people entering my lab. And my goal is always to get them excited about research. And what really is what I find really satisfying is when I see the student take ownership of their project and call it their research. They're not technicians. People don't come in the lab and I tell them measure these four things and come back to me and tell me what you found. I want them to get excited about the questions they're asking and really take ownership and become really invested in what they're doing.
I think I've definitely seen this in the course I'm taking with you. So maybe our listeners don't know, Bio3XL3 at McMaster, is comparative physio. Just the importance of really getting excited about the questions that you're trying to answer instead of maybe checking a box, right? And what do you think our scientific community as a whole needs right now? And this can, you know, branch out from research.
Well, I think one of the real pressing issues at the moment is better support and investment for graduate students and postdocs. You know, inflation and the cost of living has really made it difficult for the people we rely on so much for our research programs to be able to, you know, for instance, live in Hamilton. And so I think it's going to take, you know, a real commitment by governments to fund graduate students appropriately, because otherwise I think we're going to see a lot of people who would have really contributed greatly to research either leave research or not enter the field at all.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point. That's a really important point. And for our final question, what do you think is the least well-known fact, or maybe the coolest, about a model organism's physiology? And this could relate to literally anything, just whatever you think is cool.
Well, there's lots of things. I mean, from the course you're taking with me, of course, goldfish can survive no oxygen at all for months at a time. They're one of the only vertebrates can do this. In terms of the deer mice, I think one thing that I really grew to appreciate when I started traveling to high altitude and to collect these mice is that even in the middle of the summer, when it can be 30 degrees here in Hamilton, it can be snowing where these mice are living. And so they're expending at least twice as much energy, even in the middle of the summer, than the mice that live at sea level, just so that they can stay warm. And they're doing it with half the oxygen that we have here in Hamilton. So I think that's pretty cool.
I think the fact about the goldfish is probably why they survive in the little baggies at carnivals. And
probably, yeah.
They're horrible, horrific conditions, right?
Yeah. But there are hundreds and thousands of examples of extremely cool things that animals do. And that's why I like teaching the course that you're taking right now. I think that undergrads may not appreciate the diversity of what even mammals can do across different environments.
All right. Thank you so much for answering our questions today, Dr. McClelland. And that's it for this week of SciSection. So make sure you check out our podcast available on global platforms for latest interviews.